The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Real Life Real Crime Daily for Wednesday, May 24th, and I'm Jim Chapman.
And I'm Mike Agavino. We are woodless this morning. There's a rumor that a call came from Hollywood and a race to the airport. We are without the woodman this morning, but we are going forward strong. Jim, did I tell you that we have a new sponsor that's going to be coming on board?
Do tell, Michael.
Well, we have a new opportunity with Rosetta Stone.
Rosetta Stone.
I'm familiar with the Rosetta Stone system. And
yes.
So I thought it would be cute to try and do something funny and pull a little trick on Woody. So my first thing with Rosetta Stone is they allow one of the hosts to participate in the program and learn the system and how it works. And so I registered Woody, and the language I wanted him to be taught was English. And so unfortunately, I didn't realize that the email of record they had was mine. And so all of a sudden I started getting these inquiries from Rosetta Stone on when I was going to start my English lessons.
Right.
And so I have changed that, and I am taking Italian lessons so that I can be ready for my trip home in a couple months to see mom. So I've got one for you.
I'm ready,
and I want to see if you can decipher what this is. Jim è una macchina del sesso.
Jim is number one in our hearts.
Yes, but that's not the answer. The answer is Jim is a sex machine.
Oh, absolutely. I need to learn that one.
To Woody adora le storie su reali britannici.
Woody something.
Woody loves stories about British royalty. More Italian to come, folks. Yeah, I'm
very
working
good.
On it. Was very sad over the weekend to see Jim Brown pass away.
Yeah, that was horrible. But, he lived a long life, 87.
He did. I did not realize he was that old, and because, God, he still looked like he could kick the crap out of you at age 85. I mean, he was just this intimidating figure of a man. I mean, maybe the original tough guy.
Mm.
During his time, he was, the greatest player in the NFL. At the same time, he was the greatest lacrosse player on the planet. He left on his own terms, went to Hollywood. His reputation was tarnished by some scandals and some rumors of him mistreating multiple women, although he was never charged with a crime by any of them. But, he was anything but a victim. He was a hero to many, and he was a hero to a guy I got to know well in L.A. by the name of Bone Sloan, who he took under his wing after Bone, who was in Athens Park Blood. He was a gang member who, following the Rodney King riots, was invited on to Nightline with Ted Koppel and to do a 45-minute interview. And that interview turned into him co-hosting Nightline all week. And then Koppel, who was a Syracuse alum as well as Jim Brown, asked Jim Brown to take Bone under his wing. And Bone is now the guy in Hollywood where if you want to shoot on location in a gang area, you have to go through Bone. And Bone goes into the neighborhood and he works it out with whoever the gang members are in the neighborhood. You know, they're going to handle food, they're going to handle security, they're going to handle everything you need during the filming. So you're bringing a bunch of money to the gang neighborhood. And that business was really developed, you know, through his association with Jim Brown. So rest in peace, Jim Brown.
Yeah. So I don't know what y'all did on Friday, but I watched Dateline. And
I watched Dateline.
The special that they did on Brian Koberger, who we've talked about on this show several times. We did actually our own little special.
Whack job. What a whack job.
Oh, man. No doubt about it. The title of the series was The Killing on King Road. It was, you know, it was Dateline, and very highly produced, very well done. But we learned some things from this episode, some bombshells, if you will. Some of them you may have known if you looked at, you know, you were really in depth into this case, but we're going to give you a few of those now, that I picked up while I was taking notes, because I'm one of those people. I'm kind of a serial killer nerd.
In front of the TV taking notes on Friday night.
Absolutely.
Hopefully you had a cocktail on the other hand, but, I know there were several things that were released on that episode that came out for the first time ever. So no matter how closely you're following it, there was some new information.
100%. And what we got confirmation on, one of the things that was suspected by many people, but we never really had true confirmation, was where Koberger entered the home and where he started his killings first. Most people figured it was the third floor. In this episode, police did say and confirm that the suspect entered on the second floor, made his way to the third floor, killed both of the young ladies on the third floor, then went to the second floor, killed the young man and woman on the second floor, and exited out of the second floor. Now, this to me, in where I've kind of struggled with what the police suspect happened, is they're looking at this as a targeted thing, and it very well could have been. They believe he was targeting one of the ladies on the third floor. My personal thought is, regardless of who was on that third floor, he was going to start on that third floor because he was educated. May have been, you know, totally crazy, but he was educated. And if you're going to kill a bunch of people, you're going to start at the top and work your way down. You're not going to backtrack. So you're not going to kill people on the second floor, go to the third floor, and then go back down to the second floor to get out. If you think about it ahead of time, you premeditate it, you're going to start at the top and work your way down. To me, it could have been a situation where that's exactly what he was doing. But that was something that we had no confirmation on until that episode. Also on that episode, someone had posted under a fake Reddit account about the killings and said, if police knew it was a fixed blade, the killer must have left a sheath behind. Now, police think that was Koberger, and they believe that his ego was such that this was a way in which he was kind of letting the police know that he knew he left his sheath behind. The reason that is such a big deal is at the point of time in which that was posted on that Reddit, the police had not released that a sheath had been found. So the only one that would have known that would have been the killer. Yeah. All of that being said, if you look back at the evidence they released, it's exactly right. If they're saying we're looking for a fixed blade knife, primarily they're going to know that because they know a sheath was left behind. And if you really sit and think about it, someone could have just been taking a wild guess. But there's that. Thirdly, Koberger's family. Let's talk about them for a second, Mike.
That was the biggie for me.
Yeah. So his sister was actually in, she wasn't in criminology, but she did something with criminal justice and she was kind of suspicious of her brother.
Yeah.
So Interesting little side note here that they confirmed. His sister actually called him out, kind of imagine this, in front of his family. She turns around, and I don't know if they were at the dinner table, but in this story.
It sounded like it was that kind of context.
She basically looks at her brother, and she says, so there was a murderer, you know, in your neck of the woods over there at college, and he drives a white Elantra, and you drive a white Elantra, and she was kind of putting all these dots together, if you will. One of the strange things that we learned about Koberger is that he wore latex gloves even around his family after that incident.
Yeah.
So she calls him out, right, to his face. How about that?
When you think about the totality of what went on with his family, his father flying out to drive back from school with him, them taking this indirect route. So the route home to Pennsylvania.
Yes, 5 hours out of the way.
Extended it by 5 hours. They showed the video of, and everyone, I think, when we did see these videos in the news over the last few months, thought that the state troopers in Indiana were in contact with the FBI and these were orchestrated pullovers. But Dateline confirmed that they weren't, that these were completely independent. The two times that he was that they were pulled over, and you could see how uneasy he was, how intense he was.
Yeah.
when the cops pulled him over in Indiana, which they were making, they were just making different random stops, looking for people that if you were following too closely or driving erratically, looking for drugs and
right
and stuff and like that.
They actually said that they are trained to look at the habits of drivers. And for example, if you change lanes every time a cop pulls behind you, well, to a police officer, that's going to be suspicious. And so that's someone they're going to kind of hone in on, that maybe we need to pull this guy over and see if he's got a little drugs in here.
But if your dad.
Yeah. Dad seemed cool.
If your dad, you're not going to go for the 5 hour extended drive on a, you know, coast to coast drive. And so what's dad thinking when son says, let's take this route instead of the normal one? I don't believe it was any more scenic than the other one. So it felt like his family. Now maybe they didn't want to believe it, but that knowing how effed up he was and his behavior from the point he got home, they pieced it together and figured it out. And the story about him being in the kitchen with his latex gloves, zipping, he was basically taking anything of his that might have contained DNA and discarding it separately. So the DNA they actually used for the match with him was his father's, mm-hmm. that they had gotten out of the out of the trash, and they were able to connect that DNA had to be the parent of the DNA they had gotten off the sheath in Moscow. So it, the behavior of the family was really the thing that that stuck out. And, yesterday, the his arraignment, which separate from Dateline, but that was just.
He didn't put in a plea. So in a situation like that, what's important to mention is in something unless you knew, you didn't know, was if you're not obligated to enter a plea at an arraignment, but if you don't, the judge has full authority to enter a plea for you. So the Koberger refused to enter a plea. So the judge said, okay, we're going to plead you not guilty. And
how could a judge couldn't plead him guilty? Could they?
Why not?
I don't know how they could do
that. To me, if you don't enter a plea, I'm going to plead you guilty, but I don't either. So any of our attorney people out there that are listening, let's enlighten.
Yeah, I'm sure more will come out about that over the next few days. But
last thing on that, so this does not surprise me, because if you followed our Murdahl stuff, you know, this is common. But Koberger is getting a lot of love letters in prison.
Oh, God.
Yes. Tiffany, would you still send Koberger a love letter?
Absolutely not.
Well, you would be in the minority, because he's getting thousands.
Well, no, you would not be in the minority. This is a minority, a very small minority of women who are crazy enough to be doing this. But I mean.
They want somebody at Koberger love.
I do not understand that. And, you know, there was the weird story about the girl that he befriended whose security system he installed.
Yeah.
And that he was likely watching her.
He had her passwords at that point.
I can't imagine that they haven't released her name or anything, but I can't imagine how that person feels now, knowing how close she was to that guy and how much access he had to her and what he could have done if he was predisposed to have done it.
100%. So that's your Koberger, I guess your Koberger update as this trial or court procedure ramps up, you know, and we'll be, I'm sure, bringing you more.
Yeah. And with the way they handled that thing yesterday, I mean, it just, as you know, crazy as this guy is, I sort of expect craziness. I sort of expect that there'll be some out of the ordinary twists to this thing. We shall see.
We shall.
I want to take you guys back to a crime that occurred in New Orleans last year, and what is going on in the courts with it right now. This case got a lot of national exposure back when it happened. And it involved four teenagers who are accused in a brutal carjacking that caused the death of a woman by the name of Linda Fricke. This happened last May 19th. The case has garnered national attention, as I said, drawing attorneys and family members from both sides to pack a courtroom for this pretrial conference that happened the other day. Fricke was 72. She was carjacked by four people who attacked her as she sat in her car down in the French Quarter. Okay, and this is about 1:30 in the afternoon on March 21st, 2022. I'm sorry, I said May earlier. That was the court date, which was just held on Friday, May 19th. The actual incident was March 21st of last year. Fricke's arm got entangled in the seatbelt as they were trying to throw her out of the vehicle. And she was dragged all the way down Bienville until, believe it or not, her arm was completely severed. So she fell to the street at that point and bled out on the street and died right there. I mean, this was brutal. Fricke's sister-in-law, it's a woman by the name of Kathy Richard, said, "I just think that the horrible nature of it really opened a lot of eyes across the country." The four teenagers who were charged, their names were later released: John Honore, Brenia Baker, Markel Curtis, and Lanira Theofil are facing charges as adults for their alleged involvement in the fatal carjacking. Again, this is now Fricke's sister, Jenny Lynn Griffin, saying they had the audacity to beat her and then pull away as she's hooked to the car. In court, the Orleans Parish DA filed a motion to exclude expert testimony regarding the mental state of the juvenile defendants. Prosecutors argued that since the suspects have already pleaded not guilty, they should not be allowed to present an insanity defense. So what is happening now is the defense is looking to present an insanity defense. They are arguing that they want experts to testify about the relationship between juvenile brain development and criminal behavior.
Mm.
Richard said, it didn't just develop that day. There was no record of them being mentally deficient prior. A lot of people are surprised and angry about the defense now trying to come to the table with some kind of insanity plea and trying to bring in these experts to testify about juvenile brain development. People were running to the car, telling them to stop. You're dragging someone. The door was open. He knew she was hooked on that car. Theophile, who was deemed incompetent to stand trial, remains in a mental facility. So one of the four was deemed incompetent to stand trial. The judge on Friday said the hospital has requested she be transferred back to the Juvenile Justice Intervention Center. A doctor is expected to reevaluate her next week. So next week she will have a competency hearing and could end up standing trial with her co-defendant. So one of the four has already been put in a mental facility, and the defense is arguing for this expert to testify about juvenile brain development and criminal behavior for the other three. I mean, really, really sad case, and
it
we
is,
shall and, see what happens from there.
And I'll say that, look, the insanity defense about the hardest thing in the world you can ever pull off, because you can't premeditate and you can't make an effort to cover up and get an insanity plea. The court will automatically find you not insane if you commit a crime and then you try to cover it up, because that shows you knew it was wrong.
Exactly.
Same thing with premeditation. So very important. I think there's no chance in hell they're going to get an insanity judgment here in this case.
On the other three, for sure. The one other one who's already been in a mental facility, we'll see. Do you guys know what May 12th is? Sunday, May 12th?
Mama's Day.
That would be correct. It's Mother's Day. So let me ask you, do you basically get your mom the same gift every year for Mother's Day? Maybe some flowers, some chocolates, maybe a robe or a framed photo, right? Boring stuff, right?
Right.
Well, let me tell you about something that's totally cool and different from Mother's Day that will never wilt, spoil, or put an extra 10 pounds around her waist. I'm talking about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty unique. Cool, right?
Right.
Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you wish to ask. Your mom can either type a response to the email, or she can record her voice if she prefers to do that, or she can do both. Cool. And MyLifeInABook.com then compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book, as well as an audiobook. And if you want, and she's up to the task technically, you know, the audiobook is a great extra thing to be able to do. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy, something you and your future generations can treasure. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is kind of your chance to give her a way to share them. Every family's a little bit different, and in my family, we love to give each other a really hard time. So I've taken the approach in doing this of asking my mom to comment on some of those family moments that might be a bit embarrassing to other family members. Last week, my question was, Mom, did you feel guilty that day you hit me over the head with your wooden clog and Dad had to take me to the hospital for 8 stitches? Mom's response, back in the day, I was the disciplinarian of the house. And when you were 8 years old, you refused to get out of Nancy's, that's my sister's, plastic kiddie pool. I told you 10 times to get out of the damn pool. You didn't listen, so I chased you around the yard. And when you slipped, I nailed you right on the head. That was the last time you got in that kiddie pool. Of course, Dad had to lie to the ER and tell him that you fell on your head, but I nailed you good. The entire process with My Life in a Book is simple, and in the end, Mom will have a great keepsake that can remain in your family for generations.
Check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code RLRC at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com and use code RLRC for 10% off today.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Want to talk about a story we covered last week, which was the story of this heroic teenager in Michigan who used his slingshot to shoot this guy who was trying to abduct his younger sister. We at the time talked about him as being our new hero taking over for the I think it was another Michigan kid who had stopped the bus and saved his classmates the week before that. And so our young hero now has a name. His name is Owen Burns. And he said he was playing video games when all of this was going down. So he was at home with his sister, just the two of them. His parents were out. She was outside mushroom hunting in the backyard, which I guess is a thing up in Alpena, Michigan. At first, he said he thought nothing of it when he heard her scream, but then he heard her scream a second time, and he was like, "What's going on? I have to take a look." And so he got up and went to a window. And when he did, he witnessed the suspect, who's identified by police as a 17-year-old male. He saw that person trying to abduct his sister. Her mouth was closed. He was hugging her at chest level, and she was able to kick him just as Owen went to the window, and she broke free for a moment. And he moved lightning fast, I guess, grabbed his slingshot, got a marble and a rock. So he scrambled to get whatever he could. And then he shot the guy three times in the head and the chest. And this was enough for that guy to run off into the woods. And as we know, the Michigan State Police were able to catch up with that guy later on. And this guy is a hero, a great shot with a slingshot. Luckily, he was paying attention to his sister, at least listening while he was playing his video games. In my house, a truck could crash into the house while my sons are playing video games, and neither of them would bother to get up or hear a darn thing. So he went on Good Morning America and was very humble about things, but. Took the credit, and his dad said once it all set in, it kind of hit pretty hard because it could have been a whole lot different outcome, and talked about how proud, obviously, he is of his son. So, Owen Burns, you are our hero.
Very good job, Owen. Awesome. Now let's talk about a more important subject, pythons.
Oh, no. Jim is the resident snake man.
Yes. The man who, Mike, had a pet python snake as a weapon. Now, this is in Canada, and we got some fans in Canada. So,
not the natural habitat for a python.
No. In Toronto, they're known for blue jays, right?
Raptors.
There you go. So let me tell y'all this story. It's just absolutely unbelievable. Over the years, obviously, there's been a lot of brawls that you can see on TikTok and Facebook and all that, and they'll go viral. But they've had one go viral that you may not have ever seen. This video shows a man using a python to whip his victim.
How big is the python?
The guy's almost across the street, and he's hitting him with it. The video just really blows you away. What happens? Him and the guy start fighting. He starts wielding a snake at this guy. The guy is obviously freaked out. The police pull up within 30 seconds of him swinging this snake at this guy, and they basically get out of the car, and they say, get on the ground, and the guy complies. Now, the guy using the snake was arrested for it, And it turns out he was going around threatening people with the animal prior to this fight even happening. So it's not like he had the snake and this guy was trying to mug him and he just turned around with the snake and started swinging at the guy. He was causing trouble. Prior to that, 45-year-old Lorenzo Avila was charged with assault with a weapon for that snake. So if you're wondering,
the snake became a weapon.
It turns out he's in trouble for his choice of weapon too, because they charged him with also causing unnecessary pain or suffering to an animal. So they tacked one on with this guy. But the video is absolutely mind-blowing. We're going to make sure we post that for you on Facebook.
I look forward to
you have to see it. So, yeah, snakes can be used as weapons.
I've got all these issues with snakes we've lost on the show the last time. I'm still wondering where Bartholomew is.
Right.
Who that was the boa the woman tried to bring onto the plane as her emotionally, what do you call it?
Emotional support.
Her emotional support
animal.
Snake, yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe this python, with all he's been through, can become someone's.
Well, we'll keep you posted if we hear anything else on the
emotional
support. You know, we should name that python.
He's going to need his own emotional support human for what he's been put
through.
That's
right.
But on Friday, Nicholas Kosotis, age 40, was arrested in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, in connection with the death of Mindy Mabane Kosotis, age 40, according to the Georgia Bureau of Investigation. Nicholas, who also goes by the name Nicholas Killian Stark, is a former JAG Corps officer for the U.S. Navy. Mindy was a writer and business owner who earned a master's degree in public and international affairs at Virginia Tech. Nicholas is charged with malice murder, felony murder, aggravated assault, tampering with evidence, and removal of body parts from scene of death or dismemberment, according to GBI. Again, they just... When you think about the backgrounds of these people and then what I just said about the charges. Police don't really have a motive for this thing.
Right.
Crazy. So the shocking killing happened at the end of 2022. So we're talking December 2022 when a group of hunters came across partial remains of an unidentified woman on the grounds of what's called the Portal Hunting Club in Riceboro, Georgia. Now, Jim, I don't know anything about hunting clubs and how all this works. These are like member grounds that you can hunt on.
That's right. You join these clubs, you pay a fee every year, an annual fee, and you're free to hunt on that land. Typically, that fee will go to deer feed if it's a deer hunting camp, and keeping the grounds cut and all that sort of stuff.
Okay. But it's usually a huge area, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's much acreage.
Yeah.
Typically.
So, so these hunters who are on those grounds find partial remains. Investigators believe the woman was killed approximately a week or two before those hunters found those parts. And more parts were found scattered all around this hunting club, which again, you said covers a wide area. They actually say, quote, additional remains were discovered within a 3-mile radius on the property of the hunting club. So this JAG Corps guy, educated wife, they're married, they're seemingly happy. I looked at wedding photos of these people. Everything looks like life couldn't be better. And he's chopping her into pieces and spreading it around this hunting club. On December 13th of 22, law enforcement asked for the public's help in identifying the woman. And with the use of a forensic artist's rendering of her, they asked people to come forward. The rendering is actually pretty amazing given what they had to work with. Again, having looked at the pictures and looking at the actual picture of the woman when she was alive, it's pretty darn good. So in the meantime, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation reached out to the FBI to help with their genealogy DNA to crack the case. The GBI interviewed family members and obtained DNA swabs for comparison to the profile created through the genealogy DNA. The GBI said in its statement, Mindy Kasotis was identified on May 11th of 2023. So it took until just over a week ago from last December for them to be able to use all that information to identify her by DNA. And so it's unclear why the husband, Nicholas, was in Lancaster, Pennsylvania at the time of his arrest, but authorities said the couple had been living in Savannah, Georgia at the time of her death. Nicholas Kasotis has a Bachelor of Arts from Boston University, a Juris Doctor degree from Northeastern University School of Law, and was in the middle of pursuing a Master of Laws in National Security Law from Georgetown. I mean, that's hundreds of thousands of dollars in education for a guy who allegedly chopped up his wife and spread her around a hunting club. So
yeah.
As authorities continued to investigate, Mindy was actually from Louisiana. Mm. Although as I looked, I kept looking, I couldn't find a hometown for her. Somebody who's listening probably is from Mindy's hometown. Let us know where that is. They did have a couple of people that went to high school with her offer some quotes about about her and how terrific she was. And she
they said the name of the high school?
No, that's what I'm saying. They've talked about people that went to school with her but didn't ever say in any of the articles that I was able to access or the video stories where exactly in Louisiana she grew up. But she moved at a fairly young age. She didn't go to high school here, so don't know. But anyway, this is a bizarre case. We'll see where it goes from here. Why this guy with seemingly everything going for him and a couple that seemed to be happy, how it could possibly end the way that it ended. We'll see what we learn.
All right, a Utah man calls police, y'all, to tell them that he's killed his wife and in-laws in Salt Lake City. So the Utah man is in jail after confessing to kill his wife, his mother-in-law, and his father-in-law. The 34-year-old Jeremy Bailey called the police department dispatch on Friday at 9:45 a.m. to confess all three murders and remained on the phone until police arrived at his home. Bailey was then instructed to leave the home before being taken into custody, and police found three victims at the scene: his wife, his mother-in-law, and his father-in-law. Three of the four dogs that they had in the house were also killed. Jeremy Bailey and his wife Anastasia lived at the residence where the incident occurred, and Becky Stevens and Donald Stevens, who were Nevada residents, were visiting at that address. Police reported that a motive has not yet been determined and that the cause of death is being investigated. Bailey reportedly told authorities he had been thinking of doing this for several days after calling the police and claiming there will be a murder/suicide. He allegedly told authorities the victims had been dead 20 minutes prior to the call. He wrote the following, y'all get this, the following on his Facebook page: massacre, suicide. Jeremy Bailey just killed everyone. Becky Stevens, Don Stevens, and three of the four dogs. And then he lists the address. A victim told their therapist earlier in the day that they may have a very real problem and it may be time for legal interference after they uncovered something. So one of the victims actually kind of felt like something good is not going to happen today. Bailey claimed he was thinking of doing this for several days and admitted to storing guns in a friend's garage. Now, Bailey was booked and charged with aggravated murder, discharge of a firearm, and cruelty to animals.
Okay, so they don't know. There's no known motive. There's just an understanding that he was troubled in some way and that at least one of the three of them were afraid.
Yes, and they apparently had found out some information on this guy, according to a therapist that had seen one of the victims just that very day, and the victim mentioned, that they had uncovered something. So maybe he was molesting kids or, you know, we're just spitballing, but he was doing something very bad. One of them found out and he decided to kill everybody.
Well, either there's one really, really smart dog in that house who figured out where to freaking hide so the guy couldn't find him.
Yeah.
Or in that black heart, there's a tiny little bit of room for one dog he had some affection for because he killed everything except the one dog. So I would say if you're in the market for a mixed breed with a case of PTSD, you should look at the Salt Lake City Dog Adoption Services. That is freaking crazy.
Indeed.
We've had a lot of Utah crazy lately. What's going on in Utah?
I think we got crazy everywhere. It seems like Florida we get a lot, too. And, you know, Louisiana's got their share, so.
It's spread far and wide. It has. Well, you know what? I'm going to talk about a different kind of crime.
Okay.
A fun crime.
Okay.
Talk about stealing. And in this case, someone who stole the show.
Mm.
And this was over the weekend. We've talked a little bit at times about golf. And Jim, I believe you're casual player.
I am.
Woody says the same.
I'm a hacker, as they're known.
Do you watch golf at all?
I do.
Okay.
I love golf. I'm just not very good at it.
Tiffany, you ever play?
I'm not very good at it, but I love watching golf.
But you watch it too. So did y'all watch the PGA this weekend?
I watched a little bit of it.
Okay. Well, the PGA is one of the major tournaments in golf. There are four major tournaments, so the biggest tournaments of the year in golf, and the PGA is one of them. And what's unique about the PGA is that golf pros, if you are a pro at a country club or you're a pro at a municipal course, you are a member of the PGA. And there's a system for qualifying for you to be able to actually be able to play and compete in a PGA tournament. And this past weekend, there was a pro out of Orange County, California, from a semi-private golf course down there, who qualified and then played very, very well in the first couple of rounds. And all of a sudden, the guy was on the leaderboard in the top 10, top 15. And when something like that happens, you're such a tremendous underdog that the crowd really gets behind you. So the entire crowd at the Oak Hill Club in Rochester, New York, got behind this club pro who was playing and playing better than people like Jordan Spieth and some of the biggest names in golf, and his name was on the leaderboard throughout most of the weekend. And then on Sunday, something happened that was just unbelievable. So this guy was not playing that well on Sunday. He'd lost a couple of strokes to par, but the crowd was still very much behind him. And he came up to the tee box on the 15th hole. I believe it was the 15th hole, yes. He needed to finish in the top 15 in order to qualify and get an exemption to next year's tournament and also exemptions to some other tournaments. But he was running out of holes. He needed to make a number of birdies to be able to get into the top 15. And he made a hole in one on the 15th hole. That was one of the most amazing things to watch. It was a blind shot to him, so he couldn't see it. He knew it was on target, could see that it was going toward the hole, was going to be close, but he didn't know. His playing partner was Rory McIlroy, who is one of the greatest players in the world. And Rory McIlroy immediately turned around and hugged him, and he still didn't realize what had happened until he took a few more steps down, and the entire crowd around the 15th let out roars that could be heard all over the golf course. And this guy literally stole the show. Brooks Koepka eventually won the tournament, his fifth major tournament, and a very big win for him. But the biggest news was not Koepka winning the tournament. It was the guy who stole the show, whose name is Mike Block, who is a club pro from Southern California and is now with because of that hole in one and because of par save that he had on the 18th hole, he managed to finish 15th and qualified for next year's PGA and has already been given several exemptions from PGA to play in tournaments over the next few weeks. And best of all, if you're a club pro in Southern California at a semi-private club, you'd probably do okay, but he made $288,000 for his trouble over the weekend and stands now to make some money over the next couple of weeks. And so it's that's my kind of thievery. So Mike Block stole the show at the PGA.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, on to our next crime. Armed Texas homeowners have stopped a suspected burglar and leave him wounded in the bathroom. In Texas, an armed homeowner shot and wounded a suspected burglar who broke into the home in the middle of the night. The Beaumont Police Department responded to a report of a burglary in progress just after midnight on Friday. On the way to the home, dispatch told the officers that the homeowner had shot the suspect, who was located in the home. The officers arrived. They found the suspect, identified as 43-year-old Jason Cruz, on the floor. He was in a large pool of blood. The police officer provided aid to the shot man by using a tourniquet to stem the bleeding, which they say was instrumental in saving the suspect's life. The suspect was taken to the hospital, expected to survive, and a warrant was issued for Cruz's arrest, with police explaining he will be taken to a local jail once he's released from the hospital. Now, a police spokesperson said the homeowner will not face charges and was acting within his rights when the shooting occurred. Even though they are the ones who shot the suspect, they are still the victim. The suspect is the one who broke the law and committed the crime. This via the police spokesman. So only in Texas do they not give you any crap when you shoot someone trying to break in your house.
Yeah.
So there you go. Shout out to Beaumont. All right, now we're going to bring you to Illinois. A man strangled a teen to death, and the way he was able to do it is going to blow y'all's mind. So in Illinois, a man killed a 17-year-old girl after luring her to his home by telling her he had Disney cups she could buy from him, and he has been sentenced to 50 years in prison. Iroc County Circuit Court Judge Michael Sabal sentenced Arthur Jensen, who was 53, to 5 decades in prison for the murder of Adara Bunn on August 5th of 2019. Jurors found him guilty on 2 counts of first-degree murder for strangling the teenager when she came to his home. So let me tell you the story real quick on this. Bunn and her mother went to a garage sale at Jensen's house, and they were collectors of Disney memorabilia. So she bought some Pocahontas cups. She came back to the Jensen residence that Sunday wanting to talk to Jensen's wife to see if she had any more of this Disney memorabilia that she could buy. Jensen's wife, unfortunately, was out of town at her high school reunion, and Jensen and a friend were packing up leftover garage sale items when Jensen told Bunn to come back later to purchase the Pocahontas cups. The husband, that is. So when Bunn returned to Jensen's house to buy the cups, he killed her. The crime came to light when neighbors heard screams coming from Jensen's house. They called police. When the police arrived, Jensen told them, "There's a girl inside, and I strangled her." Police found Bunn's lifeless body inside the house, and officers arrested him, obviously, on the spot. This was a young girl about to enter her junior year in a couple of weeks. And she was a straight A student who was hoping to come up to become a veterinarian. Just a horrible, horrible situation. But they have finally sentenced this man to 50 years in prison for that crime and killing of a 17-year-old.
God, that took forever, huh? It happened in 2019. It took him until now to.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It took that long when he admitted to the crime, even. You know?
Crazy. Well, I need some banjos. The banjo beat seems a little bit too enthusiastic for this version of Dumb Criminals, because this one is dumb, but it's also really freaking violent. A Florida sheriff's office arrested a blood-soaked man after he allegedly beat his grandmother to death with a hammer and severely injured his grandfather. What makes this guy so dumb beyond using a hammer to kill his grandmother is they caught the guy because he asked his housekeeper to clean up the bloody crime scene. Anthony Michael Corrado of Naples, Florida, was charged with second-degree murder and aggravated battery on a person over the age of 65 after he went to his grandparents' home and violently beat them with a hammer. Collier County Sheriff's Office shared that Corrado's grandparents had an active order for protection against their grandson, but did not explain the circumstances surrounding the restraining order. Police said that on Wednesday, May 17th, Corrado called a housekeeper to help him clean up a home. When she arrived, she was greeted by a bloodstained Corrado. The unidentified housekeeper told police that the 34-year-old led her to a bedroom where the elderly victim was located, dead. The quick-thinking housekeeper, and man, can you imagine being in that position? The quick-thinking housekeeper came up with a plan to escape. She told Corrado that she needed to get some cleaning supplies out of her car, and somehow he thought that was a good idea and let her go outside to the car. Once she got outside, she took off, and she drove just a little bit down the road and was able to flag down a deputy, and the deputies immediately responded to the home where they located the body of the elderly woman and the injured grandfather. Corrado's grandfather was wrapped in a blanket in suffering from severe head injuries, but it looked like he was going to live after he was choppered to a nearby trauma center. Corrado is going to be going away for a long time. According to Sheriff Kevin Rambosk, this individual is in our custody thanks to the swift response by deputies and the quick-thinking reporter who was able to get herself out of the residence and alert law enforcement. Yes, you are a quick-thinking housekeeper, and Corrado, you are a sick and stupid dumb criminal. Banjo.
Definitely a dumb criminal.
And a brutal dumb criminal at that.
We're going to bring you to kind of a new segment we're going to be attacking here, and that is our Mile High Crime segment. This was a something Woody thought would be a good idea. Talk about airline crime. So we're going to give you one today. A New Jersey woman has described the shocking airport mistake that saw her flown from Philadelphia to Jamaica instead of Jacksonville, Florida. So Beverly Ellis said that she was directed to the wrong plane and didn't have her passport. Ellis, who travels between her home state of Pennsylvania and her second home in Florida, was taking a regular flight with Frontier Airlines to go for a break in the Sunshine State, as we all like to do. Everything was going smoothly until she needed to go to the restroom shortly before the flight was due to take off. She was told by the agent, "You got about 20 minutes before we take off." When she returned, the flight appeared to have almost been completely boarded, and she was hurried aboard the plane after the agent checked her boarding pass. In the confusion, Ellis had also cut her hand when she loaded luggage. Once aboard the plane, a flight attendant tended to her wound and said she'd be able to relax when the plane landed in Jamaica. Ellis kind of laughed at that. She said, I would love to be going there, but I have a beach where I live. She said, look at me, this being the flight attendant. This plane is going to Jamaica. And Ellis knew by the look on that face that that flight attendant wasn't joking. Apparently, in the stress of her injury and having to swiftly board her on the flight, Ellis was not informed that her flight to Jacksonville had changed gates. The attendant told Ellis, you've entered the wrong plane, so you're going to be entering a different country without a passport. That's bad. Luckily, Jamaican authorities allowed Ellis to remain in the jetway, the bridge between the plane and the airport, for those of you who may not know what that is, because technically that means she hadn't left American soil, which she would not have the need for a passport in that case. She was then put on the next flight back to Philadelphia, but that was several days later. Frontier Airlines told the news outlet that they had refunded her original ticket and given her a $600 voucher as a gesture of goodwill. Frontier Airlines said in a statement, we extend our utmost apologies to Beverly Ellis for this unfortunate experience and sincerely regret that Miss Ellis was unable to board the correct flight. No, so there you go.
No.
That sounds like some bullshit, don't it?
That's insane. That is, if this woman accepted that from Frontier, she's an idiot. I can't believe that close to her departure time, they would pull a gate change on her. I
mean, yeah, that's crazy.
Really late. But the onus is on Frontier to check a ticket, and it is clearly marked on the ticket where the person is going. And it must have been that way, because if this was being done through some kind of e-ticket and she was just throwing her iPhone up there, it wouldn't have accepted it. So she wouldn't have been able to get on that way. So she must have had a paper ticket. Yeah. Which means somebody stood there, looked at the paper ticket, and went, yeah, fine.
Oh, they're in a hurry. Yeah.
So it was incompetence on the part of Frontier that got her to Jamaica. I can't believe they couldn't have figured out some way with, I don't know what we would have in we must have a consulate in Jamaica or something, to some way to get a passport or a copy of her passport to an embassy there and get for her to. Did you say she stayed on the jet bridge for 72 hours?
No, they wouldn't let her. Yeah, that's what it said.
She stayed on the plane.
Yeah.
So, okay.
I mean, they may have let her kind of sit in a seat right in front of the jetway and just they're not reporting that.
Yeah, she needs,
because technically she was supposed to have a passport. I'm sure they did.
She needs to be lawyering up and going after them for
I want a lifetime
some really free flight
over that. I mean, I got pissed off when I was delayed 3 hours. I couldn't imagine going to a wrong country.
No.
In Jamaica, man.
And that's the worst part. She had to go back to. Didn't they fly her back to Philly?
Yeah,
it's the ultimate insult after all of that.
Right?
Yeah, so you stay on this jet bridge in Jamaica, and in 3 days we'll fly you back to Philadelphia. Congratulations.
Yeah, Pete Rose.
That is horrible.
Yeah.
What are we calling that segment?
That's called Mile High Crimes.
Yeah,
and that was a crime by the airline itself.
That was a major Mile High crime.
That's right.
A Michigan man is wanted in connection with an alleged dogfighting ring after deputies found 8 dogs chained in a yard and 6 others starved to death and left to rot. This is according to authorities on Friday. Casey Autry Kidd, age 29, has a felony arrest warrant for abandoning animals, according to Genesee County Sheriff Christopher Swanson. We believe that these dogs were used in a potential dog fighting ring, Swanson said. The sheriff said some dogs had multiple stages of scarring and injuries that are indicative of dog fighting. The dogs were found chained with one restrained so tightly that it could not move, according to the sheriff. We got a picture of a few of these dogs and how they were being maintained. And I mean, it's just brutal. 2 of the dogs found alive actually were chipped, and officials worked to reunite Those dogs, as well as six others. So eight dogs were relocated to their original owner. So not only is this guy using dogs in a dog fighting ring, he's stealing the dogs first and then using them. One of the chip dogs, a Boston Terrier, I didn't even think that that was a breed you could do anything like that with, a Boston Terrier, was reunited with its owner last week. The sheriff's office shared video of the second chip dog's reunion with her family on Friday. And so, yes, we have some happy reunions, but mostly we have abused and dead animals. Believe it or not, this kid guy is not yet in custody. So he's still at large, and the sheriff asked the public to exercise caution. They don't want anybody to put themselves at risk, but call 911 if you see this man. You suck, dude.
A former Florida Dollar General state worker has been sentenced to 4 years in state prison for spiking his colleague's Pepsi with bleach. Now, he says he did so because he claimed the victim was brushing up against him. Jerome Ellis was sentenced for poisoning of food or water. He pleaded no contest to the felony charge last month. The janitor, who worked at a Dollar General, was originally arrested in October of 2022 on two counts of poisoning with intent to kill, injure, and tamper with evidence. Sheriff's deputies responded to the Dollar General for a report of possible poisoning. A worker there told the cops that he and Ellis had gotten into an argument the day before, and he believed Ellis had a grudge against him. The complaint said he left an open Pepsi can on the counter in the bathroom, and when he returned and took a sip, he noticed the soda tasted and smelled like bleach. The worker told the deputies he panicked and called 911 and told his manager about what happened and secured the soda can back in the room. When the victim reviewed the surveillance video from the store, he claimed it showed Ellis pouring the bleach into his Pepsi. Ruh-roh.
I don't like the taste of Pepsi, but I think I'd like it a lot less with bleach in it.
Right. Well, during an interview, Ellis denied arguing with his co-worker and claimed to have spilled some cleaning solution on the counter. When deputies reviewed the surveillance footage, they say it showed Ellis pouring bleach in the vicinity of his co-worker's Pepsi can, then wiping it with a paper towel. Jerome went back a few minutes later and leans over the can, appearing to spit into it. Jerome once again proceeded to grab the can and wipe it down one more time. After deputies told Ellis about the video and urged him to be honest with them, the 49-year-old admitted to putting some of the bleach around the rim of the can to get back at his colleague for being difficult to work with. Ellis complained that his coworker had been brushing up against him in the store aisle. The victim, who drank the tainted Pepsi, refused medical attention. So he wasn't looking to kill the guy. It was almost like he was looking to play a non-funny practical joke on him, kind of like a joke within himself. But he got 4 years for it. Two strike, Mike? What you think?
Well, look, I until the end where I learned that the guy had bumped into him. You don't bump into people in an aisle. I mean, if you do that in a store like that,
you're getting some bleach down the throat.
It's on you, man. It's on you. So I'm surprised that he only did a little bit of bleach. I mean, you don't bump into nothing. Yeah. Sets me off like getting bumped into in an aisle.
Well, there you go. Don't bump into Mike at the Dollar G.
He bleached.
For sure.
And how could he not know there was a camera?
I know it. But you know, they don't think that far ahead. Some
My
people might.
God.
I'm Jim Chapman.
I'm Mike Agavino.
Your host of Real Life, Real Crime Daily. Give me a peace, Tiff.
Peace.
Show business.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.